Today's program was brought to you by Roth Cheese, a pioneer in the U.S. specialty cheese movement. For more information, visit rothcheese.com. This week on Meat and Three, we're getting semantic to understand the deeper meaning behind some of the foods we love. First, we'll look at the big debate happening around the word milk.
Who the hell are you to tell me what is the name of my product and my landscape and everything we've cared about when, you know, you don't have anything invested in except to put out a little money to buy it? It's our entire life.
Then we get the lowdown on the language of cider.
So the first thing that's really confusing about dryness is that it has nothing to do with how something actually feels in your mouth.
And finally, we get our fill of tiki talk.
You don't walk into a tiki bar and be like, oh yeah, this is what Polynesia is probably like. Like, it's supposed to be like fantasy and stuff. That's the hard part. It's so easy to do tiki bad, and that's where it gets a bad name.
Tune into this week's episode of Meat and Three. That's M-E-A-T plus sign T-H-R-E-E. Available wherever you listen to podcasts.
If you're a farmer and you want to connect with amazing chefs and restaurant owners to sell your product, what do you do? Maybe you go to market. Hello, hello, Heritage Radio Network listeners tuning in from 150 countries around the world, about 1 million listens a month. And right now, at 11:03 a.m. Eastern Standard Time on April 18th, I am certain every single one of them is listening to Tech Bites.
I hope so.
The weekly show on the Heritage Radio Network where we talk about the influence and intersection of food and tech. We have a great show today. It is also the last show of the winter season. It is the last show at the Thursday 11 a.m. time slot. So we're going to make it a good one.
Do you want to plug your new time slot?
My new time slot is going to be Tuesdays at 6 p.m.
Nice. Well, you'll miss me. I'm sorry to hear.
I'm honored. I'll miss
both of
you guys. Why? You said 6 p.m.?
Yes.
I will be picking my children up at, well, that's like right at the end of my day. Usually.
Aren't your kids big enough to take the subway yet?
I wish.
So that is the voice. If you were listening to the Main Course OG, which is the show right before this one, you will recognize that voice. That is the conversational stylings of Brandon Hoy, co-owner, co-founder of Roberta's Pizza, where the Heritage Radio Network studio lives.
And always a pleasure to be on Tech Bites.
We love to have Brandon. He is here, you can probably guess, like he always is, to be a focus group of one for a new restaurant tech platform.
The only focus group I know.
The only focus group you need.
Thank you.
The only focus group we need. The right people in the right seats. Yeah.
So joining us today is David Moosman. He is co-founder and CEO of a company called To Market. You can find them online, tomarket.farm, F-A-R-M. And it's a pretty interesting little platform that we'll get into in a minute.
Thanks.
But before we do, we're going to do like we always do. We're going to go around the shipping container and talk about apps we love, new ones, old favorites. Brandon, you got an app you like right now?
I probably said will be the same one that I used last time. Actually, I don't remember what I said last time, but Adobe Capture and kind of the Adobe suite of things. As a creative, it's a helpful tool. You know, it captures color palettes, it captures like shapes and stuff like that. And then so as I see something that I enjoy, I usually color capture it and capture it for angles and shapes. And it saves into my phone. And then when I'm doing design work, I usually go back and I look through things and I say, wow, I like this palette or I like these angles or something like that. So that would probably be my most used app at the moment.
So tell us.
Or Find My Kid on the Subway. That should be, if somebody's out there listening, Find My Kid on a Subway is also an app I would like to have.
Can't you just lowjack them with their phones anyway?
I think that we could. I would rather lowjack them, like just insert it into their foot.
Like an actual lowjack?
Yeah,
like a sci-fi
exactly,
kind of lowjack?
Totally.
Implant?
I anklet? Just feel like by the time my kids are old enough to
home
ride
parole.
This away, they're going to be like burner phones and all that. Like they're going to be like.
Burner phones are coming back.
Totally.
It's the 90s again.
Oh, yeah. And also, like,
I'm waiting for a beeper and a BlackBerry.
Totally. They're going to, like, leave their phone in a backpack at a friend's house and then they're going to, like, roll out
yes.
with their burner and be like,
yes.
dude, my dad thinks I'm at Kaylee's house. And it's like, dumb dad.
The old kicks.
You need to get into tech.
I do.
You need to get into tech and start building all this stuff. Okay, so Adobe. Now tell listeners really quickly, though, what is your creative output? Because we think of you as a restaurant owner and a hustler and doing all those things that come with owning a restaurant. What's your creative output?
Well, in the restaurant itself, there's all types of design stuff. You're always like trying to look at something new. And as you build new restaurants, you're always like kind of looking at things. I am looking for things from a design aspect. I also run all of the merchandising for Roberta. So I do all the clothing and all that stuff. So
merch, the Roberta's merch and the t-shirt design and limited editions,
which is really
a big deal.
And it's like really an outlet for me to just, I'm a creative person by nature and always been into art and stuff like that. So it is, I have to have that like creative outlet to do. I try to find these creative things in everything we do. Like right now we're redoing the backyard and doing some hardscaping.
The tiki bar is under construction.
Yeah, all of that stuff is under construction. And you want to look at that and like with the same creative lens that you look at merchandising or anything. So a lot of these things you try to like find an outlet for your creative side and you try to like unleash that on whatever projects you may have, and that could be anything to like rearranging just the table layout in a room. I like to look at things, you know, with the creative lens.
So, man of many talents.
I think so.
All right.
I think so.
David, do you have an app that you like right now?
Yeah, I just had a daughter, and
congratulations.
Thank you. She's 3 months old.
Wow.
It's a lot. It's great.
It'll be 6 years before your first real vacation, apparently.
Hopefully not for you. Noted. I don't know why I did that.
Noted. Yeah. We're in Denver. Every day's vacation.
You have baby merch, right? Merch?
I do.
Onesies?
Well, not baby. I would say youth.
Youth merch.
Yeah,
okay.
Youth. I've done some onesies, but yeah, youth.
Pizza okay. My Heart.
Pizza My Heart. That was actually, we did a postcard with Pizza My Heart by...
Home Slice?
Yeah. Home Slice, they did that one too.
No, I'm saying that would be adorable as a onesie.
Slice, yes.
Okay.
Right now, our baby merch says Little Stinker, which is one of our pizzas that we have here. So it says Roberta's little Stinker.
The cutest. Right.
So you just had a daughter. Congratulations.
So I just had a daughter.
Three months.
Yep, 3 months. And her name is Annalise. And
not Minnie Moose.
Not yet. My wife is German. So we call Annalise Liesel. So when she gets bigger and starts taking Muay Thai, she can be Lethal Liesel.
Mm. All right, right on. She already has a fight name. I like it.
And if she starts playing football, she'll be Diesel Liesel.
Oh.
Mm.
And if she gets into the creative side of things, we're thinking Easel Liesel. So
you really got this.
Totally.
You thought
she's going to hate you when she's 12.
Oh, I'm going to embarrass. She's
gonna
hate I'm going to embarrass her every single day. And we're not here to hit ground balls. We got to set her up. Got to set her up with a great nickname.
I named my first daughter. She's named after Charles Barkley. Her name is Charlotte Barkley, and we call her Charlie. So she is Charlie Barkley. So that was, we jumped right in with that one.
Totally. No, that's a good place to go.
Girls with boys' names are cool also, you know?
I hope so.
James King, you know? Charlie, so. Like all that. It's great.
She hates Charlie. She's like, I'm like, Charlotte.
Like Charlie.
Damn it.
Charlie's cool too.
So yeah, this leads to an app.
Right. So one of my biggest pet peeves is how none of the conferencing apps seem to work. And so my new favorite thing is Duo, Google Duo. It just works. And I have been able to see my daughter while I'm here in New York City. So
fantastic.
And that's why the story led from Liesel, because Google Duo, it just works. My parents, they love it now too. It's like the first app my dad's put on his phone ever. To be able to see his granddaughter.
And this is a replacement for like
Skype or Blue Jeans.
WhatsApp? WhatsApp has video and audio calls.
Yeah, but there's no texting. It's just you have pictures of your contacts and it just shows you open it. It's a video of you and pictures of your contacts. You click on those pictures and it calls them. And you can leave a video message. There's no text. There's no... phone calls just reroute back through the phone. And it's so easy, my parents can use it.
Wow. So easy your parents can use it. That's an endorsement.
I'll take my Google royalties when they get around to it.
I'm sure the check is in the mail.
I can imagine.
Mm-hmm.
Google still writes checks manually.
They do. They're those really big ones that you see in the pictures.
Ed McMahon. Yeah, totally. The Ed McMahon check. Yeah.
You're like, why is this check so big?
It would be very funny if they had a super outdated paper HR department or something like that.
I'm sure they do.
I was wondering if you had to take those big checks to bigger banks.
Yes,
if they had
you
bigger
did.
Slips.
Yeah, they have like a huge deposit. It's like there's one place to deposit your giant Ed McMahon check.
I want to see the drive-through air tube that can take a giant check, or you just fold
like
it.
It's like the Flintstones.
The teller's inside it.
Yeah, they're giants too.
So, in addition to having a three-year-old newborn, David has a food tech startup, which sounds like a lot of activity at your house.
Again, we're not here for ground balls. We're swinging for the fences, and if it was easy, everybody would do it. So piling it on.
When David and I spoke before the show, I think the best description of what to market is came from an analogy. So to market is a platform that connects farmers and
purveyors
to chefs and restaurants. Much the same way OpenTable allows restaurants to put reservation inventory up online and then diners can search and book reservations, to market allows farmers to put their inventory online and then restaurants can search, find it, and purchase. So what we're going to do, because we do have the amazing Brandon here as focus group of one, I am going to let David take the conversation and explain to Brandon what it is and how it could potentially maybe be a useful tool to somebody who has 100 responsibilities at least and many restaurants to run.
And food is most of them. 99 problems and they're mostly around food.
98 of them are food. Where I like to start is where I started. I was eating 13,000 calories a day playing professional football with the Cardinals. After that, I went to Italy. I made pasta there. I worked and cooked in Brazil, Boston, for Island Creek, and in Napa, all the while working on farms and purveyors of various types and on some of the best restaurants, you know, in the country and arguably the world. And so we saw the same problems, is that farmers don't know how to find chefs and chefs don't have time really to find farmers. It's not that they don't know how, it's not that they're not smart, it's that they're literally working two jobs to, some of them literally need to work two jobs, some of them are working a two job on their farms or purveyors, and they have to figure out how to figure it out. Every single one. Every farmer that's ever walked in this door is just winging it. And every chef has to do the same. So what we did is we put a communication platform to connect purveyors directly with the people that want their product the most. And on the chef side, we've seen how disorganized things can be with a piece of paper on the wall or walk-in, and how disjointed things can get if one chef leaves. We talked to a chef in DC. He had 160 purveyors on his cell phone. What happens if that guy gets hit by a car? What happens if he wants to take his first vacation in 6 weeks? He's going to leave his cell phone. Where we really wanted to differ from other tech sources out there, there are marketplaces, there are white labels, there's a lot of people trying to do this, and we understand that. And where we really want to be different is because we think it's about the relationships. We think it's about the relationship between the farm and the restaurant, or the distributor and the restaurant. And so we know that relationships are about communication of what the farm has, how much you want, and the details surrounding that, when they deliver, how much they can deliver, minimums, fees, timing, all that kind of things in a frictionless system. So everything's all in one place for you and you don't need to figure out how to figure it out. You just go to market.
So can you tell me how does the distributor, so because there is really a rich connection between most chefs and farmers, at least in New York there is. I think that connection is
everywhere.
Person to person, they call each other all the time.
Yeah,
regularly.
My partner Carlo is really he's really engaged in that and he's really has like personal connections to a lot of these people who give him food,
an actual person to person relationship
and I think those things are rich, right?
Yeah,
but And I think oftentimes where a lot of this becomes difficult is there's a thin layer in between it called distribution, right?
Yeah.
Which can make things very difficult.
Yeah.
Not a lot of farmers don't have direct access to get their food to to me, right? Wherever I am. So how does market like connect the three pieces that are the food chain, right? The restaurant food chain, right? There's the chef who wants a thing probably from this person, and that person has to usually then give it to this person who is a distributor to have it distributed, right? So can you explain to me the connection between all three parties, how the distributor lays here?
Yeah, so what we really are doing now is we're focusing really hard on being really good at one thing, and there are a lot of problems here in the agricultural space, specifically delivery, payments, and where we think needs to sit in front of all that is a efficient communication platform. So we don't touch money and we don't touch product. You don't pay us for that farmer's food. We don't want to get in the way, because then every person that touches food adds 40% to the cost and throws away around 30% on average around the world. And so we don't want to, we don't deliver and we don't handle processing. We only work with people that do. So if you're a farm and you want to sell to a certain restaurant, we'll easily connect you to that chef through a simple friend request, a connection request.
Got you.
So if you're a chef.
And they would deliver directly.
They would deliver directly.
So this is cutting out the middleman.
We want to be a tool for farmers to open up new avenues. If they want middlemen, yeah, absolutely. Aggregating distribution is very effective and very efficient.
Sure.
And not everybody can drive into New York City.
Well, also the middleman usually requires some sort of minimums that don't allow smaller producers to get into the game.
So, or smaller restaurants.
And the nature of the new market is chefs are usually looking for smaller producers who specialize in a very specific thing.
Yeah.
That they probably have a hard time finding distribution because
they're niche,
and the fact that they usually produce such little amounts of something, they can't like really provide the larger distributor.
Yeah.
So
there's this really kind of scary thing right now that people are really just starting to grasp, and it's data. And so what we really want to do is...
Why is data scary?
What's the scary thing about it? That's a really good question. So I was talking to my brother about this.
Because data's been scary since there was data.
Right. And so, I'm not saying it's scary now. I'm saying it's always been. Because there's this allure that it's complicated. And it's like... physics, like how many levels of why do you want to know about how an atomic bomb works?
I don't think data is complicated. I think it can just be an enormous quantity.
Exactly.
And when it's a huge, like if you know three things, that's great. If I hand you a bucket of 12 billion
fire
things,
hose.
You're going to have a hard time finding those three things.
Maybe
that
not
want.
Me. I'm a huge, I love that. I would like dive into a million things, but I'm probably the outlier in this thing. I think most operators in my position try to narrow the dashboard, right? They try to narrow the things that they're looking at, and they want to see very specific
focus.
Things. Yeah. Yeah. I could name almost everybody's dashboard. There's their cost of goods. There's their labor percentage.
Yep.
Like they're going to go down the line of easy levers to maneuver to make their operation profitable. Right.
Yep.
So you're going to look down that dashboard and you're going to quickly glance at it and say, all right, here's the things I can move to kind of change direction. Myself, I usually have a second and a third tier like dashboard of like smaller variances and things that I like to see that don't necessarily show isn't a lever that you could maneuver to actually change something. It shows a trend that may affect your lever, that may affect your levers later, the major thing. So you might see something that's moving up and down that'll get
What's an example of a first tier dashboard?
I mean, your first tier dashboard,
exactly,
is all your COGs, overhead, like your labor cost as a percentage, right? As a percentage of sales. A lot of these things are as a percentage of sales, right? So you could adjust when you're busy and when you're slow. Yeah. So that's like, those are dashboard.
Tier one.
Those are dashboard items that you actually can maneuver to like change the profitability of your business, right? Mm-hmm. The second tier stuff start to be more like variance, like why is this, like, show me the difference between these two things and how, and if you start looking at differences, like here's a good variant, like a year over is a variance, right? Most people use a year over, like it's not a complicated data item, but a year over is a variance, right? You're looking at what I did today this year and what I did today last year, right?
So because you have the tiki bar under construction now, today, this year, and last year might be very different for beverage sales, for example.
That's correct, right? Even though I do have a secondary bar, but I can see that variance and I can understand like why things may be different.
Advertising, but, marketing, stuff like that.
Totally. And all of those levers are hard to maneuver. Those usually give you ideas of where you can go to maneuver to get into these like more dashboard level things, which are the common things that help you in profitability. Again, it's really simple. It's cost of goods, it's overhead, and it's labor. Those are like the three major things that you can control, and sales, right?
Yeah. And so what we're doing is we're bringing we're basically providing a really frictionless, simple interface for a lot of complex of fire hose of data. It's complex how good you are at math. It's complex at how intricate you want to get into this data. It's complex at the enormity of it. And so what we're doing is we're trying to take that data and show people what's available and less what they should be doing. We're not really here to say organic is intrinsically good or conventional is intrinsically bad or local is 100% of the time good. We're just here on how you get those products that you want.
So describe the dashboard that Brandon would see if he was a restaurant using To Market.
So Brandon would see, so we're building out the native app for all of your different buyers. And essentially, Brandon has multiple restaurants in multiple places, and each one of those...
production for the frozen pizza.
All sorts of avenues. And so all of those different places each have a purchasing manager of some sort. And so how do they make their purchases? They're sending phone calls, emails, text messages. And how do you know when something went wrong? Only when you get the invoice at the end of the day. And so what we're doing is if anybody's used Slack, that's another app that kind of conglomerates information and communication. So in each one of your buyer's apps, they have the ability to everybody being able to see what messages they send to the farmer. So if you have two buyers in one restaurant, a lot of the times, one of those buyers won't have the phone number for the farmer and say, hey, we're closed, don't come in. But then they have to ask the other guy and he's off because it's Tuesday and it's his weekend. Like we discussed a little bit yesterday, it's really interesting that the impetus of the term farm to table came about because of miscommunication. If you watched the Netflix series on Blue Hill, I don't know if you guys heard this story.
I've never heard this story, no.
Did you verify this? I don't know if you saw it.
I didn't, but okay. I didn't hear the story either, so go ahead.
So there's an episode with Dan Barber on called Chef's Table on Netflix. And so not the impetus of the idea of farm to table, but the term farm to table was coined because Dan Barber went to the farmer's market and bought 10 flats of asparagus. And he came back into his walk-in and there was 15 more flats of asparagus. So Dan Barber had a rough day and said, there's asparagus on every plate in some form or another. Puree, poached, grilled, whatever. Everybody's getting asparagus. And so a very esteemed food critic of the New York Times walked in. And so everything was perfect and everybody was on edge. And then the article came out and the critic loved it. Critic said, this is how...
Blue Hill in Manhattan or Blue Hill Stone Barns?
Manhattan.
Okay, so this was a long time ago.
Yeah. And so he loved it. He said, this is what farm to table means. That when asparagus is in season, everybody gets asparagus. And so that's how the term coined was because of a miscommunication, because Dan Barber didn't know what his other buyers were doing. And so what we're trying to do is putting it all in one place. Everybody sees everything, so nobody has to ask. When somebody orders asparagus, the other person gets a notification. And the administration can put permissions on their buyers and says, this chef is my burger restaurant. He just gets to see buns and patties and ground beef. This guy is at our high-end location. He can gets carte blanche and this guy gets a budget or whatever and can only see certain products and certain prices. And so that everybody sees what everybody else is doing. And most importantly, and I'm really curious to hear about on your side, turnover. You know, we're in a very transient place. And when one chef leaves, we've heard so many farmers walk into a restaurant and nobody knows who they are because unfortunately they had a relationship with a phone. And
I have the benefit that my partner is the chef, so he's not going anywhere.
He's not doing all the ordering for all of your different restaurants. And
this is true, but we do have centralized ordering here. So you know, not saying that one person does all of the ordering, but everything flows through them. So they see everything. So we have one person who sees everything, right?
All the text messages that go out?
Not all of the text messages, but they see the centralized ordering. So they see like pretty much every order, collect the invoice, and then that goes back to accounting. So they gather everything. So, but I see this problem, the double ordering, the stuff like that, because there are, you know, for us just in this restaurant here, there's multiple people that order, there's multiple kitchens, right? Yeah. So there's a, you know, pizza,
bar.
There's pizza chefs, right? And there's a back kitchen that does other food. So there's two different people that are ordering over here and ordering over here. Pizza, we have a commissary kitchen. So most of the like ordering from Pavreyer gets done there, and then it gets processed in some sort of way. Like tomato gets made into pilati, or curd gets made into mozzarella. Like those things get processed there, and then they make an order within ourselves. Yeah. So we have a very complicated system that needs to be managed essentially by one purchaser, right? Because we're not just purchasing from outside purveyors, but we're also purchasing a large amount from ourselves.
Yeah.
So that's crazy.
Right.
It's a crazy system. Well,
we're our biggest
customer.
So we call it.
We are going to take a quick break.
Sure.
And find out who the sponsor is of this show. Did you know Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit, and we're kind of like public radio? We keep the lights on and the mics hot out of the generosity of our members who are listeners like you, grants, and amazing companies who underwrite shows like this one. Stay with us.
Today's program was brought to you by Roth Cheese, a pioneer in the U.S. specialty cheese movement. Roth is in its 25th year of making specialty cheese in the rolling hills of southern Wisconsin. With strong Swiss heritage, Roth is best known for its award-winning Alpine-style cheeses under the name Grand Cru. Fresh Wisconsin milk, combined with expertise in affinage, is how Roth creates high-quality, great-tasting cheese year after year. In 2016, hard work paid off when out of over 2,000 contenders, Roth Grand Cru Serchois was named world champion at the World Cheese Championship. For more information, visit rothcheese.com.
Are you enjoying this podcast? Heritage Radio Network has plenty more. My name is Sari Kamen.
And I'm Leah Kurtz. And together we host Food Without Borders here on HRN.
Immigrants make our food system vibrant, diverse, and delicious.
Each week, we invite a guest to talk about how food connects them to their past as we explore what it's like to be an immigrant in the U.S. today.
You can find Food Without Borders wherever you listen to podcasts and on heritageradionetwork.org.
Well, if you're just joining us and you're wondering what the hell you clicked on, this is Tech Bites, the weekly show on the Heritage Radio Network where we talk with influencers and innovators in the food tech space. And today, that is David Moosman, who is out from Denver, Colorado.
Thanks for having me.
Talking about his new company.
You might know him as Moose if there's somebody out there listening who's like, who's David Moosman?
True.
Yeah.
His company is called To Market. If you want to follow along online, it's tomarket.farm. You can find them on social media at tomarket.farm, and dot is spelled out on Instagram. His platform is to connect restaurants to farmers to make life easier for everyone and to find out if it really would make life easier for everyone, representing everyone in the restaurant industry.
Everyone.
It's Brandon Hoy, Roberta Pizza owner, co-founder, Heritage Radio Network co-host.
The representative of everyone.
In the restaurant industry.
Oh, in the restaurant industry. Yeah. I was hoping but just that's like okay. Everybody in the world.
Everybody eats.
Yeah.
So we were just talking about TaMarket. It essentially is a communication platform for restaurants to connect with farmers. How would that make Brandon's life easier? What if his purveyor isn't on your site?
Yeah, that's what...
I mean, that's the big question, right? How many purveyors do you work with at Roberta's?
Here in Brooklyn, we probably have, you know, I would say 20, 23, which is down. We've had as many as 40, 50 at times. So we've actually really, over the last 3 years, become really focused on trying to just get to the ones that we really like and not order two things from this person and just try to find people who can get the stuff for us. And so much less. I would say probably, you know, in the mid 20s. Blanca is like our exception because Blanca kind of, we will have new purveyors constantly.
Well, it's a super very fancy, high-end, fine dining, also, gastronomic always, tasting menu.
They're always
Michelin.
Looking for a thing, right? They're always looking for a thing. So that's the difficult process. Like if your purveyor doesn't have it, then you have to go out and find it. And often for them, they're looking for a thing. So we'll get new purveyors. We'll have purveyors over there sometimes that we'll have for weeks and never see them again. So that's unfortunate.
Yeah. So I guess it's two questions. One, what happens if Brendan's purveyors aren't on the site? And two, what would the chefs at Blanca do if they were looking for something? Is it like looking for something on Amazon?
Yes. So, number one, it is, what we're building is a network. So, we're not a month, we're not like a monthly fee for restaurants and chefs. They don't pay. We simply want to get more people more orders. So we're 99 cents an order to the purveyor. And so we are really a tool for the purveyors and the farmers and the distributors. And so we're going out and talking to more farmers and seeing who else has this problem. And 90% of them out there.
So if I was looking for Sandab in California, I could just search in a product and see if there's a purveyor that carries it.
So what we're building, is that ability, because we're not here to tell you to be local or tell you to be organic or whatever. We're just making how you find the next product easier. And we're bringing that data to the distributors and other people. So if you're looking for a Gretti and you can't find it or something, Vita Lococe, fresh Vita Lococe, we want to take that data that all of that we're conglomerating from more and more chefs and then bring that to somebody who has that product and say, look, here's an instant plug and play. All you need to do is accept a friend request and from these chefs who want your product. Because it's we do have a really simple system for the chefs, but what we're really here to do is solve the farmer's problem, because the chef's problem is how to find the farmers. And the farmer's problem is that they don't have an easy way to be found. And so that is the tool that we're building, the tool for the
and
farmers.
What's the cost to the chef?
Most of our farmers
friendship.
What's that?
Friendship is the cost.
Easier doing business. We're saving our chefs around 20 minutes every order just because of the back and forth on inventory. Well, you said you had garlic. Well, I wanted this much and you don't have it and that kind of thing. And then the communication. If you guys have an inventory or cost tracking software, we API into that. And so anything that you order through TaMarket instantly gets uploaded into that software.
I think he said there's no cost to the chef or the restaurant, but they charge the vendor 99 cents an order. Is that what it is?
Yeah, just 99 cents on however large.
So for you, it's free.
That's amazing.
I mean,
I'll tell you one thing the operators like.
Free.
Free?
Yes.
Yeah. And so, are you worried about quality if something's free?
I would only be worried about quality.
Freemium?
I think in this instance,
the farmers pay. We're a tool for the farmers. We just the thing that the chefs do is save time with a simpler system than have a complicated mess than it was before.
I think the vetting process is almost the same, right?
Yeah.
So from a chef's perspective, you say, I need this product. I need uni, right?
Yeah.
And then this allows you to see who has that product,
exactly.
Right? And then you would as a chef, most likely what you do is you vet those things. You say, who is this? Where do they? Where is this
Maybe
coming
you
from?
Know
what
them.
Are they doing?
Maybe
do I
you
know
don't.
Them? Maybe I right. don't. Maybe somebody else uses them. Usually you're going to do your own. Nobody's going to do the vetting for you necessarily.
So,
this, so then you say, this is respectable. This is going to be high quality uni that I would purchase, and I know who they are. And if it's not local and they want to be local, they may choose not to. Yeah. If they don't care, they can choose to. Mm-hmm. If it is local, you may be pleasantly surprised.
Is there local uni in Brooklyn?
No.
Yeah, I thought there might be some like crazy hydroponic indoor aqua farming thing happening.
No, but also, you know, I have a restaurant in California, so sometimes we get different things, and there's different locale, right?
Yeah,
that you look at.
So what we say is we don't sell your product. Your product sells your product, and your story sells your product, because you hear at Roberto's and especially at Blanca, a good portion of what you're selling is a story.
Right.
Of the experience, of the story of how much effort you put into sourcing that product, how much effort that farmer puts into making that product great. We're here to translate the inventory of the farmers into the needs of the chefs and the wants of the chefs back into orders and share the story to the end consumer. So when you walk into one of the restaurants on our system, instead of a chalkboard, we have an e-blackboard so that you can see exactly who that restaurant connects to, privacy preferences, you know, aside, and see what that farm does, how long they've been doing it, what products they have available, and then even take a virtual farm tour on one of your other ones you talked about, a 3D experience. And so if you hold the phone and you move it around, you can actually walk around the farm.
See, you can't see this on radio, but I'm actually looking at a 3D
of a farm
video,
tour.
Yeah. 3D tool of a farm.
And yeah, it's a little bit Portlandia-ish, but the real thing
Never seen it.
It's okay. It's a little bit hipstery, but the real point is the transparency and the traceability, so that we can go to, so some restaurants are local whenever possible, and that's perfectly acceptable.
Now,
but
what's
what does that
mean? Now, what's the collection of data on my end as an operator? Is
Ooh,
it is it
good
is
question?
It, is it am
are
I
you collecting his data?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So we want to be the most transparent data company in the world.
That's not a yes or a no, though.
Yeah, we're collecting. Yes. Yes, we're collecting everybody's data for everybody else, and so
which I usually have no problem with. I'm just wondering then what is that data creating? What's the algorithm that data
is the complexity
creating
that
that's going
about.
To give me an advantage in as an operator?
Yeah, so a couple different ways that we're currently building. So again, to stress, we want to be the most transparent data company on the internet. We want you to know. And be able to choose who can see what aspects of your data. We're talking to the Department of Agriculture in Colorado and the Extension Board and to large distributors. And so you can choose to sell your data or not. And you can get back the data from across the country and in other regions or however big or little you want by selling your data. And so it's not for... what you would get out of it is a couple different things, and I'll show you.
Brandon wants to know what he's going to get on his dashboard.
Yeah.
Well, I also want to know.
He likes those snapshots, what's moving up, what's moving down.
I'll be honest with you, the full transparency. What I'm trying to get is who's the biggest purchaser of this data. I want to actually know who wants this type of data.
Yeah. So
who's out there that really wants this data? Who's purchasing the data?
And we want to tell you.
You can email us, techbytes@heritageradionetwork.org. If you know, or if that's you.
I don't know. I think Moose is going to tell me who's buying the data.
We know who has and who doesn't have. I've talked to the Secretary of Agriculture about this kind of stuff. And it's really difficult for an underfunded organization like them to collect data at such depth and articulation. And so on a very... surface direction, what we're building is we've seen crop calendars where the months are at the top and the bars. And so what some departments and extension boards are doing is sending people around with clipboards asking what farmers are selling at markets. And that data is good, but it's really slow. And it's only once or twice a year. And so what we're doing is we're having it in real time for farmers and chefs to see trends, to see needs, to see unmet demand in geographic locations, whether they want that at a national level, whether they want that at a borough level, whether they want that at a regional level. And then so that we can go to these farmers and say, hey, look at all these chefs that want huitu locoche or, you know, uni. And let's provide them a product.
So this is a more of a moral question. Who won't you sell data to?
Excellent question.
Yes, that's a super great question. The answer is it's up to you. We want to make it up to you who you want to see your data. We are here for the farmers. The farming is a really
But if you're selling data to Monsanto, who's giving them an advantage on what kind of monocropping future it could actually be like a devastating
evil empire.
I totally understand.
You could be funding with
evil
data
empire.
The takeover of somebody who may actually eventually, you know, small farmers.
We're here for farmers, and we're not here for Monsanto. They have enough money.
So you do have a list of people or some people in mind that or companies that you would not sell data to?
So we have some plans for data, and we know what some people would use for data, and we know what we could use it for. And there are some things that there are large companies that have the ability to aggregate delivery and distribution, and that would help out a lot of small farmers. And so depending on the data, depending on the usage, there are some people that we would talk about that with. But again, we want to be the most.
I mean, this is a tricky subject because it's a slippery slope here.
Hey,
one person's line may not be another person's line, but far and all, I think the moral question is like, at what point do you say that this is a long term, that this is a con long term for the small farmer and an advantage short term? Is this data collection and the selling of the data going to affect them adversely down the line?
I think
you have to like kind of look at like where that moral line lies.
And it also moves.
It does move because there's, I mean,
things happen.
We want to provide this data for these farmers. You know, their communication is so hard. Things are so hard for farmers in between New York and San Francisco. You know, there were literally piles of soybeans just rotting on the ground because they couldn't find a buyer. We don't know how high up our product is going to be able to go, but we know that the problem is that farmers don't know how to find buyers when they come into a situation.
Yeah.
Of that has the effect of their own
right. Well, I mean, soybeans,
judgment.
Soybean is an interesting crop to talk about because it has so many political implications, but it also has implications in a sort of social trending nutrition way that many of the very, very popular nutritional eating styles or nutritional diets like Whole30 or keto, you're not eating soybeans or any soy product for one reason or another. So there's a growing segment of the population that is choosing not to eat
certain
things.
But also, if you're a soybean farmer, you've probably chosen the subsidy over the
possibly. Yeah.
And so these are at the larger scale. They want fewer orders for more quantity, and we completely understand that. And so at the end of the day, you know, this is a really tricky subject, and our guiding star is that we're here for farmers, and we will do what's best for that.
So here's a question. Do you vet the farmers, or can any farm be on there? Can any farm be on your website? When you say you're there for the farmers, that's great.
We're,
and then I think that there's also, I think,
because this
generally
is another
people, another slippery
slope here,
slope, right?
You could
say generally
ethical farming that's deteriorating the you know,
industrial farming complex.
What Tumarket does is provide the communication tool between what farmers have and who wants it.
So any farm could be on there.
So if you're a farm and you want something that is being is super detrimental to society and super detrimental
to
the ground.
I'm that terrible pork farm that was in the New York Times.
There are a lot of people doing terrible things out there. And what we're here to do is connect who wants what with who has it. And if we
can
show the data,
could be on your site.
And if we show the data that less and less people want that product, then I think we can show, again, that delta of who wants more heritage breeds, who wants natural farming, who wants pasture-raised pork, and show that there's demand out there for it.
So
if they want to be able to do that.
What are the requirements for a farm to be on your website?
Be transparent.
It sounds like somebody, if somebody wants it.
Yeah, it sounds like it could be anybody. And then you're
be transparent about what you're doing.
And then it's laws of attrition or supply and demand that create opportunity, but you're not opposed to having any type of farm or purveyor on your site.
I think if I heard this correctly, he's leaving it still to the hands of the purchaser to make the
right.
the moral decision right. on what they want to buy. Okay. And I think that's like no different than it's no different than any other forum right. really. They're saying you can buy anything you want. The moral decision on what you buy is still rested on
there
you.
There are some marketplaces and portals that want to curate sure. or collect or have a point of view.
Sure.
This is open.
What we
want
to be we want to be focusing exactly on being the best product that we can. And the best product is not the what, it's the how. And we want to convey the what to not only the chef, but also the diner in the best possible way, how. And that's what To Market does. Yep. And we want to, what we ask our farmers is quality and transparency. You got to do the best product that you want to be doing, and you got to be telling us what that is. And if you know, you think if CAFO Farm is the best quality product that you're doing, and you are transparent about what that farm is doing to the surrounding community, about what it's doing to the soil and ecological health of the state and the river and you know, the watershed, and you think that there's a market out there for that. What To Market does is we're going to share that story. And I think that things are going in a direction of a more, you know, you said underlying tiers of underlying tiers for your dashboard. And I think that there are a lot more underlying tiers that are necessary out there. It's not just price per pound. It's cost of goods sold. And that means cost of sustainability, cost of regenerating the land, cost of what this is going to look like for my daughter.
Yeah, and all so, of that stuff should be added into the product, and I think that transparency is more readily available than it ever has been.
And it's a lot harder to be transparent around phone calls, emails, and texts, and that's what we're here for. And yeah, you know, there's a lot of really tough questions out there. I don't know if you guys heard of these two German gentlemen, Haber and Bosch. So they solidified the. They are almost inarguably the two most influential people in the world. They developed the process of solidifying nitrogen out of the air. And they also developed the process of making mustard gas. So they've been responsible for millions and millions of deaths, but they've been responsible for feeding billions and billions of people. Would they have known if what they were doing could do both? Are they bad because of the deaths? Are they saintly because of the lives they fed? Are they now going back to demonic because of how people are monocropping things? This is a very slippery subject, and we're in flight. And our guiding star is to be here for farmers and being transparent. So, you know, this we love to keep talking and about the data because it's so interesting to us, and I keep wanting to hear so much about it. And I'd love to keep hearing everybody else email Heritage Network as your thoughts on how much you know about data, how much you want to know about data, and who you trust with your data.
We could do an all data show.
I'm so open for an all data show.
Like sometimes we do really geeky shows, but it could be a lot of fun.
That would need to be like a marathon.
Well,
like a 24-hour data marathon.
If only there were pizza
We should do, you know, this is Heritage Radio Network's 10th anniversary. Been on the air since 2009. Maybe we should do a 24-hour, like, Heritage Telethon, or maybe like a 10-hour,
sounds like
year.
Sounds like we found a person to round it up.
Oh, my goodness. It'll be a lot of fun. And we can have, like, beer and pizza.
Yeah,
there's like a cocktail.
With soybeans. Yeah. Soybean pizza?
There's some maybe tequila. Not
soybeans, I got a good deal for you on some soybeans,
I'm
Brandon.
Sure. It sounds like we all have a good deal on soybeans
there's
right now.
There's some tequila that's staring me right in the face over there.
And it is. One of the joys.
It is.
It's hard to keep her at bay.
Yeah.
So I am sad to say we are not only out of time, we ran over time.
Ah.
Something flies when you're something
fun. I know. It's
fun.
So good. There's always so much more to talk about. If you are interested in meeting David Moosman, he will be back in New York City on Tuesday, May 14th at the Food Future Cohort Number 4 Capstone Day. Mm. You can buy tickets on Eventbrite. I would search Food Future Cohort 4. If you want to find them online, it is tomarket.farm. They are currently taking information from both farmers and restaurants who are interested in being a part of the site. You can find them on Instagram at tomarket.farm. Brendan Hoy, Roberta's Pizza, owner, co-founder, merch master.
I like that. I'm going to add that to my business
merch
card.
Master.
Yes.
Also, Heritage Radio Network co-host. He is on Thursday mornings, the main course OG. That's at 10 a.m.
Also, my real job is board member of Heritage Radio.
I thought that's your real job was dad.
That is actually my real job. Dad, husband, those are real jobs.
Absolutely, the most important jobs.
Yes, they are.
The rest is just soybean. Mm-hmm.
Thanks, guys, for having me on. Really appreciate it.
Thanks to all our listeners listening to the last episode of the winter season. Come back and listen to Tech Bites. We will be at a new time starting in May, Tuesday at 6 p.m. It's going to be a great season. I think we're going to hit episode 200 real soon. We're at 174, I think. Tech Bites is engineered by Jeet Paul. Our theme song is Nomada CPU Track by the amazing DJ Uptown Nico. You can find him on SoundCloud and venues around New York City. I'm Jennifer Liuzzi, your host and producer. And this is Tech Bites. Thanks for listening.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network. Food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to learn more about our 10-year anniversary celebration happening all year long, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork.
Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.